From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight, celebrating its 15th year on the air. I'm Beth Ruriak. In 2010, the J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles was drawn into a lawsuit over a piece of art, 8 pages from an ancient manuscript. This caught the attention of UC Davis art history professor Hegnar Zeitlian Wattenpah, and she eventually wrote a book about the manuscript and the international battle that unfolded. We talked about it in April of 2019. Her book is titled The Missing Pages.
For me, the story began on June 1, 2010, when I read a news item that the Armenian Church had sued the J. Paul Getty Museum. And I was stunned because I'm a member of the Armenian Church. I've also been a Getty Fellow. So it was as if two parts of my identity had come into conflict, and I wanted to know more about what the dispute was about.
The rest of the story begins centuries ago.
In the middle of the 13th century, in a beautiful castle on the Euphrates River, where the person who is now recognized as the greatest Armenian medieval artist, Toros Roslin, created a beautiful gospels for his patron, the head of the Armenian Church.
I think in context, we have to talk about what you call the mother manuscript and then these 8 pages. As an art object, as an artifact in the world, what is this and what does it mean?
The object that was created was a gospel book with a beautiful binding. At some point during the events of the Armenian Genocide, 8 beautifully illuminated pages were separated from the main manuscript. And the manuscript ended up decades later in the Republic of Armenia, whereas those 8 glittering pages ended up at the Getty Museum. These pages are canon tables, which are like an index of sorts to the Gospels. And they're beautifully illuminated with abstract ornament, but also these wonderful animals and fruits, including those 2 roosters that are on the cover of my book that stride very confidently towards a vase.
Let's go back to Toros Roslin. He's a bit of a mystery himself. How is it that he came to create what have become some of the most powerful, holy, and rare images in the world?
That was one of the mysteries I had to confront. I realized that the person that we now recognize as one of the most important medieval artists, we knew nothing about him for 7 centuries. His name completely disappeared from history. What we do know about him comes from his own words. He signed his name in the 7 manuscripts that are known to be by him, and he says a few things about himself, but he spends most of his time talking about his patrons and pious invocations.
Let me go back to your first words about this. You were reading a newspaper, and you saw an article in June of 2010. What was happening as you read that article, and what did you decide to do next?
I was really intrigued with the way in which the 2 sides were characterizing the work in question. For the Armenian Church, this was a sacred object that had miraculous powers. For the J. Paul Getty Museum, this was a beautiful work of art that deserved to be in a great collection and to be shown to the largest public.
So let's go back to that manuscript. It had stayed for centuries in a tiny church somewhere, a remote church.
In a mountain village, alongside many other medieval relics. But only this manuscript has survived from all of the treasures in the churches and monasteries of that area.
The manuscript moved intact, and then came the era of World War I. Mm-hmm. And what happened?
That was the period of time that was under contention in the lawsuit. And from what is possible to reconstruct is that the manuscript was taken out of the remote town of the church that it was in for all these centuries, and it moved from place to place. And at some point, the 8 pages, the canon tables, were separated from the rest of the manuscript and made their own way through Ellis Island and eventually to Los Angeles.
There had been a stop in Aleppo.
It is not exactly clear how they got to Aleppo, but the Archbishop of Aleppo did a complete description of the pages.
And you know this not only by following documents, but you literally traveled the path that the manuscript and the 8 pages traveled.
that was one of the things I wanted to do to understand this manuscript, is to retrace its steps. Even when there was not much left of the places and buildings where the manuscript spent time. So I went to Hromgla, the castle on the Euphrates, where it was created, to Zeytun, the mountain town, where it last served as a religious object, to Marash, another town where the manuscript was lost, then found again, and also the Republic of Armenia, where the mother manuscript is preserved today.
Other than this court case in Los Angeles, a lot of this story was unknown. It hadn't been constructed as an entire biography before, had it?
It had not. And that was the revelation for me, how the life of this manuscript over its 700 years was also a way in which one could tell the history of the Armenian people.
At what point did you say, I've got to be all in on this? I have to commit to wholly telling the story. I can't just write a short story about when it stopped in Aleppo, for example.
There was some sense at the beginning that I would focus on the court case because it was a very interesting court case and brings up a lot of issues about the responsibilities of museums today. How should works of art be displayed that are also religious objects? But at some point, it became clear to me that the entirety of the life of this object was powerful. The court case was one episode of its long and fascinating life.
What happened? What was decided?
After 5 years of mediation and litigation, the church and the Getty settled. The Getty acknowledged that the 8 pages had historically been the church's, and the church in turn donated the pages at the Getty. So the pages remain in Los Angeles, and the mother manuscripts remain in Armenia.
How much time have you spent pondering over them, looking at them?
I've been very fortunate to visit them several times. I think those pages, even though they are so small, for me, it is the most beautiful work of art in the world. Every time I see them, I find new visual events, new elements that I had not suspected. The parchment has a beautiful color, and some of the colors, like the red dots, have an almost three-dimensional quality. I think they're endlessly fascinating, and they're also sacred objects.
How is it that over such a long period of time, the integrity of the colors on the pages has stayed strong?
The Zeytun Gospels, of which the 8 pages are a part, like many particularly valued gospel books in medieval times, were not really meant to be leafed through. Those beautiful illuminations were not really meant to be seen by everyone. The manuscript spent most of its time as a sacred relic in a special box in a niche in the church on the citadel of Zeytun. It was taken out on special occasions in processions around the city to ensure the protection of the town and its people. So most people probably saw it as this dazzling object with a beautiful binding that the priest would raise above the congregation. That explains why the manuscript enjoys such a good state of preservation, even though it is 700 years old. It was rarely used. And the canon tables that you can on occasion see at the Getty are a combination of very abstract and very lively. You are basically seeing an architectural frame, an ornate architectural frame, and within that are rows of numbers. The index, it's a concordance list of similar passages that appear in various gospels. For medieval Christianity, this index was extremely important theologically because it showed you how the four gospels were connected. They told the same story. They also connected the New Testament to the Old Testament prophecies.
They are tiny.
Each page is about 8.5 by 11, the pages that you have on your desk.
As opposed to what we might think of in more modern times as the big Bible, for example, or the big Torah, the very large,
absolutely.
Grand.
Absolutely. It's a tiny object that demands your attention, demands that you look at them in a very specific way.
It's important to say in studying art history that you can look objectively at an object or a piece of architecture, like Notre Dame Cathedral, something can have dual narratives. you can document that, but you try to look at something objectively in its history and path.
I was very interested in both documenting the straight art history of this object, but at every turn, I discovered documents and saw testimonies about the deep connection that people formed with this object. Mm. And I wanted to understand that more. It was as if the object itself exercised its own agency, its own power. Objects like the Zaytun Gospels are considered to be miraculous. They are not inert objects. They are very potent objects that can accomplish miracles in the world. So I wanted to really understand how medieval people understood that and how people understand that today, how believers see sacred objects today. And what is that relationship between an object that is enhanced also by these incredible aesthetic qualities?
And do you believe in the miraculous qualities of objects?
Beth, I have to say, when I was in the presence of the Canon Tables at the Getty in a beautiful, you know, museum hall surrounded by many other visitors, I could feel the pull of this object. It's not just a work of art to me.
So has this work spawned new curiosities for you?
I'm very interested in these objects that, after atrocities or genocide, have survived, how they reinvent themselves in different contexts, and who are the people, especially the art dealers or other middlemen, who become purveyors of sacred objects for the art market. There are some very interesting stories to be told about New York art dealers in the 30s and 40s who were involved in excavating but also buying objects from the Middle East, some of them like the Zaytun Gospel survivor objects and others newly discovered, and how they also created what we now understand as the field of Islamic art or the field of Byzantine art. So it's a very dynamic moment where art history is shifting and where Americans are discovering a wider world in a very interesting way.
That was UC Davis art history professor Hegnar Zeitlian Wattenpaw. She was talking about her new book, The Missing Pages. You can find more of our favorite conversations at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.